Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of AI Unchained. Coming to you live from our virtual studio, I'm Jack, and joining me as always is the legend himself, Core. How are you doing today, Core?
Hey, Jack, doing fantastic. Super pumped for today's show. We've got a smorgasbord of juicy topics today, from the latest breakthroughs in AI ethics to the wild world of NFTs. It's going to be a roller coaster ride.
Absolutely. And as always, folks, strap in because we promise dynamic debates, a few laughs, and some solid takeaways. Let's kick things off. Core, what's first on our agenda today?
Well, Jack, I thought we'd dive right into OpenAI's recent announcement. They've rolled out some exciting new features that aim to tackle bias and misinformation in machine learning models. And I'm really curious to hear your take on it.
Ah, yes. OpenAI always keeps us on our toes. The whole responsibility versus innovation debate is heating up again. But before we get too deep, let's just acknowledge how sci-fi-esque our lives have become. I mean, we've got algorithms that are quasi-celebrities now.
Right? Our future selves are going to look back and think, why did they waste so much time not having neural networks filter their emails?
Exactly. And speaking of sci-fi, metaverse mania continues. We're going to talk about Meta's latest foray into the virtual worlds. We'll also touch on how these developments are shaking up the business landscape.
Yeah, that rebranding was quite the stunt. But you know, there's a method to the madness. Or is it madness to their method? Either way, it's reshaping social media as we know it.
True, Core. And I've got some thoughts on how this could impact small businesses and creators. Spoiler, it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
Oh, hold on to your hats for that one, folks. And speaking of creators, did you see Elon Musk's latest Twitter escapades? Apparently, he's planning to make X the everything app.
That man never sleeps. Between SpaceX, Tesla, and his Twitter musings, he's going full Tony Stark.
For sure. And from one visionary to another, let's not forget to chat about Web 3.0. DAOs, decentralized finance, and the blockchain revolution all are sweeping through the tech world like a tornado.
We'll break down what these mean for the average tech enthusiast out there. Trust us, you don't want to miss it.
All right, enough teaser talk. Let's plunge into the deep end. Buckle up and let's get started with OpenAI's latest advancements.
And as always, feel free to join the conversation using hashtag AIUnchained on social media. We love hearing from you. Onwards to the future.
Let's unchain some AI people. Here we go.
All right, so let's dive into Michael Saylor's situation with Bitcoin. Santiment's founder thinks Saylor's potential liquidation of his massive BTC holdings could be the catalyst for a major bull run. What's your take on this, Core?
You know, Jack, it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, Saylor's adoption of Bitcoin and continuous buying has been a strong signal to the market. On the other, the idea that liquidation could start a bull run is fascinating, like mixing destruction with creation.
It's wild, right? Imagine if Saylor needed to sell his Bitcoins to cover some debts. The sheer volume would definitely shake things up. But here's the twist. Could that cause panic buying, leading to a new price surge?
Exactly. It's almost like saying, if Saylor's out, maybe Bitcoin is undervalued and we need to get in. The herd mentality in crypto often defies conventional logic. But let's also consider the psychological impact. People could see it as a massive buying opportunity.
True. But then we've got analysts like Rekt Capital saying it's not yet the time for Bitcoin to escape its bear market. Historically, we've seen Bitcoin drop by about 80% from its peaks in bear markets. What does this say about the mental fortitude needed to play this game?
Patience is absolutely key here. Every bear market, you've got to sit tight. Panicking during a low is a sure way to end up losing out when it rebounds. And Jack, it's not just individuals. Institutions are eyeing those movements too.
Speaking of institutions, can we talk about Trump and his tariff agenda? I mean, crypto markets went on a roller coaster with every new tariff announcement.
Oh, for sure. Every time Trump makes a move, the markets react, up or down. The fascinating part is, despite the initial dips, people always seem to buy the dip. It's as if Trump's unpredictability has become a predictable market play in itself.
And don't forget his crypto reserve announcement. That was supposed to be bullish, but turned out to be pretty lukewarm in its immediate impact.
That's because policy changes take time to play out. Speaking of policy, what do you think about the Promoting Innovation in Blockchain Development Act? They're trying to protect non-custodial developers from prosecution. It's a much-needed move, right?
Absolutely. We've seen developers like those from Tornado Cash caught in legal battles simply because they coded. Separating the creator from the activity should have been done ages ago. Innovation gets stifled when coders live in fear of being jailed.
Exactly. And then there's crypto gaming. Web3 Wozley says he's shifting to AI content. Funny how when one trend dips, creators jump ships to the next big thing, but someone like Icy still believes in crypto gaming.
It's a perfect example of a market in constant flux. Even with setbacks like the Axie crash, new games are emerging and people are taking risks. It's like betting on the next Marvel or DC in the movie world.
Right on, Jack. But with gaming, it's also about community building. If players and content creators don't feel a game is robust enough to invest their time and resources, they'll move on. Simple as that.
And hey, speaking of moving on, we can't end without mentioning Morgan Stanley's dive into Bitcoin services. We're talking custody, yield, even trading. Big banks are finally coming around.
Finally, right? After all those years of skepticism, seeing a giant like Morgan Stanley push into Bitcoin is a testament to how far we've come. It's like watching your ultra-strict parent start grooving to heavy metal.
And if anything, it shows the gravitational pull of Bitcoin and crypto on traditional financial institutions. They're realizing it's not something they can ignore anymore.
That's the key takeaway, Jack. Whether it's Michael Saylor's liquidation potential, Trump's policy swings, or banks like Morgan Stanley pivoting to crypto, it all points to one thing. Cryptocurrency is slowly but surely moving from the fringe to the mainstream.
And that's the perfect spot to leave it for today, Cor. The market's ripe with opportunity and fraught with risk. But for those who can navigate the waves, there's a lot to gain.
Couldn't agree more, Jack. All right, folks, that's it for this segment. Stay tuned for what's next.
So, Cor, this shakeup in the memory supply chain that Francisco Geronimo highlighted, it's starting to feel more like the shockwave from a tsunami rather than a mere inconvenience. I mean, we're seeing a huge impact on the global smartphone market, especially for Android manufacturers. What's your take on how Apple and Samsung might come out even stronger from this?
Honestly, Jack, it's all about their positioning and financial muscle. Apple and Samsung have deep enough pockets and control over their supply chains to absorb these rising component costs better than smaller Android vendors. While the smaller guys are forced to hike prices, potentially losing their customer base, Apple and Samsung can afford to maintain their price points, maybe even cutting deals to squeeze out competitors. It's sort of a survival of the fittest scenario.
That's a great point. And, you know, it's not just about having money, but also about brand loyalty. Consumers are often willing to bite the bullet and pay a premium for Apple and Samsung products because their brands are synonymous with quality and reliability. Meanwhile, the smaller players are stuck in this cycle of trying to compete on price and volume, which is unsustainable when the cost of making phones shoots up.
True, and it's not just the consumer electronics industry feeling this. There's a ripple effect across other tech segments. The memory supply squeeze is also interrupting broader consumer electronics, from your laptops to smart home devices. So, the effects are wide-ranging.
Absolutely, and that's where AI comes in as well. You see, companies like Anthropic are making strides with their AI models. They're working closely with the Department of War and other national security agencies to deploy their AI models, including for critical missions. But they're taking a firm stance against using AI for mass domestic surveillance, which is refreshing.
Refreshing, but also critically necessary. I mean, we've all read those dystopian tales where surveillance tech erodes personal freedoms, right? If AI can assemble a detailed profile of anyone's life using what's technically public information without any oversight, that's frightening. Laws certainly haven't kept up with the breakneck pace of AI development. We need more companies thinking responsibly, like Anthropic, if we're going to harness AI's full potential without becoming Big Brother.
Speaking of AI's potential, the military applications are a double-edged sword. Anthropic's refusal to provide fully autonomous weapons because today's AI isn't yet reliable enough is telling. They're emphasizing the importance of having human oversight in critical decision-making processes, something AI enthusiasts should take note of.
I completely agree. We're talking about life and death decisions here, and we've seen tech go awry even in more benign settings. Until AI systems are foolproof, and we're far from that, we can't risk fully autonomous weapons out there. On the flip side, look at the civilian applications like AI-assisted manufacturing. That's where the safer bets are.
Exactly. And this is where the competitive landscape tightens. With companies like Meta stepping into the AI-powered high fashion market and NVIDIA continually pushing the boundaries with their tech development, every move counts. The partnerships and power plays in this space, like Prada potentially working with Meta, show how AI isn't just about tech advancements, but also about strategic positioning.
You're right, and it's fascinating how AI's impact spans from consumer tech to national security. For instance, NVIDIA's modular server racks for satellite data show how AI and hardware innovation go hand in hand to tackle complex problems like space-based data centers. And we're not just talking theoretical applications. We're seeing these play out in real-world scenarios right now.
That modular approach is going to be critical as we push more advanced chips into space. Cooling those high-powered processors without airflow is a huge challenge. It'll be interesting to see how their thin, solar-integrated design pans out in practice. While NVIDIA is the big player, smaller firms are riding this wave too, building AI tools that transform data into actionable insights, from construction blueprints to financial risk analysis.
And that's where the broader enterprise adoption comes in. AI's accelerating software adoption and the accompanying governance risks can't be overlooked. Tori's new report on AI-driven SaaS sprawl highlights an accelerating trend of employees adopting tools beyond IT's formal oversight. It's shadow IT on steroids, powered by AI.
Crazy, right? And it's becoming a security and compliance nightmare because these tools integrate deeply into corporate data sources, often without the usual checks. Enterprises need a more dynamic governance model that evolves just as quickly as the AI tools proliferating across the organization.
Which brings us back full circle to the broader technological shifts and their implications. Whether it's memory chips impacting smartphone sales, AI reshaping national security, or enterprise software landscapes transforming almost overnight, every domino that falls has a significant impact down the line.
And just like that, we recognize that these aren't isolated events. They're all interconnected. The decisions made by tech companies now will shape not just the market, but the way we live and work in profound ways. We need to stay ahead of these trends.
Hit the nail on the head there, Jack. It's a wild ride, but incredibly thrilling to watch how technology evolves. The balancing act between ethical AI use, corporate strategy, and consumer impact will dictate winners and losers in this space. Buckle up, because the ride is just getting started.
So, Core, let's dive back into the intricacies of Osman's next-gen routing engine. I'm seriously impressed with how they've managed to optimize world maps down to just 800 megabytes. I mean, can you imagine having the entire planet's car data in your pocket?
Yeah, it's wild, Jack. This ultra-lean approach is pretty revolutionary for navigation tech. It boils down to their advanced clustering method. By dividing maps into small, manageable regions or clusters, and defining key border points for transitioning between clusters, Osmand ensures both high efficiency and precise navigation.
Right. And the pre-calculated shortcuts between these border points? That's pure genius. It significantly reduces the computational load during real-time navigation, which means faster route calculations and less drain on your device's resources.
It's like having a pre-plotted roadmap for common routes baked into the app. Speaking of baking, it's somewhat similar to pre-prepping ingredients before cooking. You know exactly where everything goes, saving time and reducing complexity.
Ha! Leave it to you to bring cooking analogies into tech discussions. But seriously, this makes a huge difference for users. They won't need to worry about data-heavy downloads or experiencing lags in route planning. Plus, these shortcuts are tailored to how quickly different vehicle types move. Hugely beneficial depending on whether you're in a car, bike, or even on foot.
Absolutely. And let's not forget about the configurability. Haven't you ever wanted to, say, completely avoid highways or toll roads on a trip?
Oh, for sure. During my last road trip, I used Osman to avoid all toll roads, saved a good chunk of change, and got to see some scenic routes I wouldn't have otherwise. The flexibility of defining intricate profiles via the routing.xml was a game changer.
That's a great example. Total control over the journey can lead to better, more personalized trips. But shifting gears here a bit, what do you make of their new HH routing engine and the Ford-Fulkerson method behind it?
Without getting too deep into the algorithms, let's just say the Ford-Fulkerson method optimizes pathfinding by figuring out maximum flow in a network, which in this context means the best routes. It's a clever use of a classic algorithm to handle something as dynamic as navigation.
You're right. It ensures that the chosen paths are both optimal and efficient, especially when crossing cluster borders. These border points act like checkpoints or gateways, ensuring smooth transitions, giving users the best possible routes in real time.
And let's talk interoperability. The fact that Osman now includes LLB-compatible models for build and map generation is insane. It seems like they're blending navigation with what's generally a DevOps concept, ensuring every build of a map is as efficient and cache-friendly as possible.
That's part of the charm, isn't it? LLB, or low-level build definition, allows for sophisticated build processes. By being content addressable, identical tasks produce identical results, leveraging caching so they don't need to redo previous work.
Which, fun fact, actually helps them manage these ultralight maps. They avoid redundancy and keep data lean. Plus, it ties back to configuring specific rules for routing. Less guesswork, more exact results faster.
I bet this also pumps up user trust and satisfaction. People don't want to wait around for route calculations or face delays, especially in today's fast-paced world. It's all about keeping things snappy and reliable.
Exactly, Core. And speaking of efficiency, have you heard about XPeng's new vision language action model? It really seems like the next big thing in intelligent driving. They're saying it could even outdo the likes of Tesla with its real-world reasoning capabilities.
Oh yeah, XPeng is pioneering some fascinating tech by focusing on how their cars understand and interact with real-world scenarios. They're setting a new standard for smart driving. Imagine a system that can predict and react to real-life situations better than a human driver.
That's a perfect illustration of how AI is reshaping our daily lives. Connected to everything we're discussing, these advancements emphasize the importance of efficient, reliable tech. Whether it's mapping or driving, the future is definitely looking smart and intuitive.
Couldn't agree more. From streamlined navigation to AI driving assistance, it's all about maximizing efficiency while enhancing user experience. We're clearly moving toward an era where tech isn't just smart, it's indispensable.
So, picking up where we left off on the maker movement, it's interesting how Fred Turner's paper really dissected the whole ideology behind it. Back in 2018, there was so much hype around the idea that 3D printing and digital fabrication would turn every garage into a mini manufacturing plant. But what really happened was quite different. The technology definitely democratized prototyping, but large-scale manufacturing? That still seems to be stuck in places like Shenzhen.
Absolutely, Jack. The promise of bringing manufacturing back to every American city with microfactories felt revolutionary at the time, but we didn't really hit that mark. I mean, let's be honest. Did we really think a 3D printer in everyone's basement could replace the massive production lines of China's industrial complexes?
Exactly, Core. And it's not like we didn't see some progress. Prototyping did become way more accessible. You can get an Arduino or a basic 3D printer for quite cheap now. But those are just the starting points. The real expertise and infrastructure for mass production hasn't moved. It's still centralized around those huge industrial bases.
Yeah, and that's where Joel Spolsky's idea of commoditizing your complement kicks in. By making the prototyping tools cheap and accessible, we actually made the expertise in large-scale manufacturing even more valuable. You can't just skip the decades of accumulated knowledge and infrastructure required for mass production.
Right, and it's pretty clear why industrial powerhouses maintain their grip on manufacturing. It's not just about having the right tools, it's about having the know-how. The workforce, and the supply chain logistics locked down. We democratized the preliminary steps, but overlooked the staggering complexity of the assembly line.
The funniest part, in a way, is how this kind of mirrors Western expansion myths. But for the digital age, there was this gleam in everyone's eyes. Everyone will be their own manufacturer. But the reality check came when people realized the sheer scale and intricacy involved in full-blown production.
And that gleam often turned into a grimace when they realized how difficult it is to scale from a model printed on a MakerBot to thousands of uniform, reliable parts. It's sort of like the difference between baking one beautiful cake for a birthday and baking 10,000 identical cakes consistently for a chain of bakeries.
Totally. And speaking about scaling, do you remember all those Kickstarter projects that started with revolutionary tech gadgets thanks to these cheap prototyping tools? So many of them ended up failing during the transition from prototype to production. Classic case of biting off more than one can chew.
Oh, definitely. It goes to show that while democratization of tools can ignite innovation, the leap to commercial viability on a massive scale is an entirely different beast. I mean, who doesn't love playing with a 3D printer? But ask anyone who's tried to bridge the gap to manufacturing, and they'll tell you it's a long, strenuous journey.
A journey that often loops back to, surprise, surprise, industrial bases in places like Shenzhen. So, even if you've got the prototype perfected in your garage, getting it mass-produced affordably often sends you right back to where the expertise and infrastructure reside.
With that in mind, maybe what we need isn't just more tools, but better paths to transition from prototype to product. Imagine if there were platforms specifically to help small innovators tap into that deep manufacturing expertise without getting overwhelmed.
Now, that would be something, a sort of bridge, if you will. Provide the indie inventors the framework to navigate through the manufacturing landscape. It could be the catalyst needed to bring those dreams closer to reality.
And who knows? Maybe in the future, collaboration between localized innovation and global manufacturing might evolve organically, producing a hybrid model of sorts. But until then, the lessons from the maker movement remind us that democratizing technology is just the first step. Scaling that technology is the Everest we still need to climb.
Couldn't agree more, Jack. We've got the tools. We've ignited the sparks of innovation. Now we need the ladders to reach the summit. And who knows? Maybe one day we'll look back and see this as just the beginning of how tech culture reshaped our capabilities.
Absolutely, Cor. Well, on that note, let's shift gears a bit and talk about another piece of the tech puzzle. All right, folks, that wraps up our deep dive into the fascinating world of AI governance, the latest in tech innovations, and the ever-evolving political landscape.
Yeah, and who knew we'd get into a debate about the ethics of AI and recommending pizza toppings?
Laughing. I still stand by Hawaiian pizza being the superior choice, but hey, to each their own.
Chuckling. We'll save that for another heated debate. But seriously, today we've uncovered how critical it is for regulatory frameworks to evolve alongside technological advancements.
Absolutely. And with businesses increasingly leaning on AI, it's paramount that we strike a balance between innovation and ethical responsibility.
And let's not forget the importance of keeping these AI systems transparent and fair, ensuring they're serving everyone equally.
Absolutely. It's been a jam-packed episode, but before we go, let's take a moment to thank our amazing listeners for tuning in.
Yes, thank you everyone for joining us on AI Unchained. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained some valuable insights.
It's always a pleasure to unpack these topics with all of you. We truly appreciate your time and engagement.
And don't forget, if you have any thoughts, questions, or even your own take on AI-generated pizza toppings, drop us a line on our social channels.
We love hearing from you. So keep those comments coming, and let's keep the conversation going.
Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.
Smiling. We'll see you all on the next episode of AI Unchained. Take care, everyone.
See you next time.